Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check, Joe Heschmeyer with us here in studio. It's Flannel Panel. We're doing news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And does the world feel ruder to you? Does it feel like people are getting ruder? You know when it feels ruder to me? Another time when it feels ruder to me, when I'm driving through a parking lot, grocery store, church, whatever, doesn't matter. And people just walk in the middle of the, like everyone is supposed to wait for them to find their car. Have you guys noticed this? Like, this is a this is a real thing. Like you're in a parking lot. There is a just walk a couple feet to the side there, and we'll all be okay. But people seem to feel that no, that's too much of an imposition on their autonomy as human beings.
People bring their pets into grocery stores.
People bring their pets everywhere.
I think the pets thing really bothers me.
Me too.
It does.
It's bad.
I'm
a dog person. Yep, it's ridiculous. They'll put their little toy dog or whatever in the basket or the front basket where your child is going to sit or where you're going to put your tomatoes or.
Yeah, right. This is like your dog doesn't. It's your dog's not a person. Even though you believe your dog is a person, your dog's not a person. Stop doing that.
Right.
Okay. I'll tell you what. I'm going to do the quiz with you guys now. Is it? And this quiz comes from Lizzie Post, who. Lizzie Post is the co-president of the Emily Post Institute, Nepo Baby. And wait, was that rude? No, Emily Post was a manners expert. Not the same as Miss Manners, but Emily Post, like you would ask Emily and you would write a letter to the newspaper. This was in the days when they had newspapers. So you write a letter to Emily and you'd say, am I wrong about this? And
then Emily Post was etiquette. Miss Manners was manners. Judith Martin. Judith Martin was Miss Manners.
So I don't know if Judith Martin has any descendants who are in the business. But the writer of this article in Vox, Ali Volpe, found Lizzie Post and asked her about rudeness. And the points were fine. Everything, there was a lot that was good about it. But then they did this little quiz at the end of, or as part of the article. Is it rude? So we will now play the game, is it rude? And I'm going to start with the ones that Ali Volpe gave to Emily Post's descendant, Lizzie Post, now the co-president of the Emily Post Institute, an institute that I have to say I am fully supportive of, is if what they're trying to do is grease the wheels of social interaction by encouraging people to have manners.
Can I follow up on that observation that you just made? Etiquette is not arbitrary. It has practical value. I mean, and also, it's an interesting thing, isn't it, that people have to be trained or schooled or reminded or corrected or refined. I mean, the fact that there's a column about etiquette is an interesting thing. What do I do in this circumstance? What is the common practice, or over time, what has become the practice? But these practices are not just arbitrary things in the way that Joe was describing earlier. You slurp your bowl or you don't. They actually do, as you say, lubricate social interaction.
Yeah, so the proper etiquette, for example.
There's a moral purpose to them.
Yeah, but give me an idea of what is etiquette. Etiquette, for example, is the thing people always say is, I don't know
what
which fork to
I
use. That's the thing. Yes.
Well, let's start with not with your hands, right?
Yes, that's the proper etiquette.
Yeah.
So then,
some people need to be told that.
Yeah, but if
don't wear a hat indoors. That's another one. Some people need to be told
ladies
that.
Ladies
may. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let me ask you. Is it rude? Is it rude?
Can I quote an possibly apocryphal source from the 11th century?
About hats and doors?
God in his wisdom has provided man with natural forks, his fingers. Therefore, it is an insult to him to substitute artificial metal forks for them when eating.
Was that Charlemagne that said that?
I don't know.
Not in the 11th century.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right.
Speaking of Charlemagne.
But actually, when forks were introduced to England, they were viewed as too Italian, and were thus viewed as a little
effete,
frou-frou.
Effete. Yeah.
The English would have been should have embraced more Italian. They should have embraced more of the Italian way of life.
Yeah, especially the
like
cooking.
Like staying Catholic would have been good. Yes, would have been a good one. Cooking things properly would have been a good one. The English would have done better had they adopted more of the etiquette of the Italians. But speaking of Charlemagne, Chris said that, and I know why he said that, because we want to invite you to come on our cruise with the Flannel Panel, and we'll all be on it, and we're going to cruise up the Rhine, not down the Rhine, up the Rhine.
We will Even start, though on the map it looks like down the Rhine.
It looks like down the Rhine, on the map, because the Rhine is like the Nile, right? It runs it flows, but it's kind of more meandering than the Nile, so I shouldn't have used that analogy. But you go up the Rhine from Amsterdam to Basel, Switzerland. We will start in Amsterdam on May 2nd. We will end in Basel, and we will visit all the most important Christian sites along the Rhine, which is the doorway for Christianity to enter Europe, certainly to enter Germanic Europe. And we're going to see where St. Hildegard, doctor of the church, was. We'll the aforementioned Charlemagne will make various appearances.
Aachen, Trier.
Cologne. And we'd love it if you'd come. Just go to catholiccruise.com and you can come.
We're running a special deal.
Oh, we are? We're running a special deal right now? Tell me about the special deal.
I can't.
Oh, you can't?
It's special.
Oh, it's top secret?
So
you got to go to CatholicCruise.com?
No, you have to, actually, what you have to do is send an email to cruise@catholic.com.
Cruise at Catholic. Send us an email now. You can find out this secret super deal.
And that goes to Jennifer Phelps, and she will offer you an amazing deal.
Cruise@catholic.com.
Cruise@catholic.com.
And I don't even know what this deal is. I'm going to email Jennifer
I don't know
Phelps.
Either. No one's told me. This is
I can't
secret.
Say it on the radio. Sorry. Joe, I can't.
It's one of those. You cannot say it on the radio.
You have to send an email. If you forget cruise@catholic.com, send an email to radio@catholic.com and say, I heard about the amazing deal, and it's only through Labor Day, and then that'll get to Jen Phelps, and she'll get in touch with you, and it's an amazing deal.
Cruise@catholic.com. Send your email to find out about the deal. If you just want to see the dates and where we're going, go to catholiccruise.com. May 2nd is when we embark on this exciting adventure. All right, is it rude? Is it rude to talk on the phone in public? Yes or no, gentlemen?
Typically, yes. It depends on the setting.
Yes.
If you're in a confined area where people can't easily get away from you, yes. If you're talking at a louder than normal volume than you like compared to what you would in a two-person conversation, yes.
If in public means people can overhear your conversation, the answer is yes.
Have either of you seen?
I'm a little more moderate on it because I've talked to other people like when out and about, and so talking on a phone doesn't feel that different. Although it is different in some ways, and there's actually some interesting studies on this, that people have a harder time tuning out a phone conversation because they're hearing half of it and they've been programmed to listen to that and then respond.
Yeah.
Whereas when you hear two people talking, that it's closed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like you're wired to want to reply to somebody just saying, hey, how's it going? And unless there's somebody else who immediately jumps in and says something else.
Either of you seen the videos on the YouTubes where the guy goes to the airport? You know the airport is the worst because there's always some clown at every gate who sits there and talks really loudly.
He's
on
a high-powered businessman.
Like, or it's a woman who's there's various personalities that undertake this, but there's always the one.
Somebody always has to do it.
There's always the one loud talker. Yeah, I'm about to get on the plane, but I just bought 5,000 shares of Intel at 19. And everybody learns about this person's life and all what's going to happen to them, what has happened to them. We're all learning about this person. There's a guy on YouTube who sits down next to these people and talks on his phone, but he answers all the things that the other person says. And then the other person starts to realize that this person is having a conversation with them.
Then
they look over at the guy and go, they're like, are you talking to me? I'm on the phone. And he points to his phone like, no, I'm on the phone. Please don't interrupt me. I'm on the phone. And then they go back to their conversation and he has the other half of their conversation. It is hilarious to see it because every time they get offended by it, he just points at his phone and goes like, could you stop talking to me? I'm on my phone. Like, leave me alone.
That's excellent.
I mean, the
most outrageous place people talk is the restroom.
Oh, on the phone in the restroom?
Yeah, it's.
What kind of restrooms do you go to, Joe?
Airport restrooms.
Yeah, airports are crazy.
Times someone
man.
Is having a full-on conversation from a stall in the men's room, and you just think, what is your life come to? And what is the experience for the person on the other end of that? That can't be pleasant.
Airports are amazing for a few reasons. One, the loud talker on the phone. Two, the group of five friends who walk five abreast through the airport at a slow speed because they're chatting. Nobody can get around them. Everyone's trying to get to their flight, but these five are having a ball. Those are some of my favorite people. But
for me, it's the way people dress in airports.
Really?
I feel like of the three things, that one is the least disruptive.
No, people dress like utter savages in airports. They wear ball caps indoors. They wear spandex.
You are. I feel like this whole thing always comes back to Chris, and the rest of us are not dressing right.
I'm feeling very insecure
about my job right now because you should see how I dress
at work. We should
bring
Thomas the TikTok engine out so that we don't feel as bad by comparison.
See how many people are wearing ball caps indoors. You'll be amazed. You'll be like, what is going on?
You know what you should do? You should walk through an airport slowly, talking loudly on your phone about how badly everyone is dressed. Like, oh, look at this clown in her knee-high boots and yoga pants. Like, you should just do that.
Let me pitch a design that we could just carry in the shop. How about a don't wear baseball caps indoors baseball cap?
I like it. I like it.
That could be flannel panel marketing, shop.catholic.com. We'll see if anything can happen.
All right. What's your view of the following one? Is it rude to text someone late at night?
I grapple with this. I got a text last night at 11 o'clock. I happened to be awake, and I was able to reply right away. I'm good at always leaving my phone on silent at night, and if I'm not, I blame myself. And I sort of expect other people operate on that same set of rules.
I'm going to tell.
But I do worry about inadvertently waking people up.
The answer is rude. But actually, there's a solution to this. Why is your phone in your bedroom?
Okay,
Stop having your phone in your bedroom.
The answer from Lizzie Post is no. It is not rude. People can control their own devices. You can text them whenever you want.
Right. Like if someone doesn't have their phone in their bedroom, you texting them is not a problem.
Right. If you just turn your phone off like you're supposed to, I'm not bothering you. I'm just taking care of business. You can get like someone. This amazed me. Someone once complained to me for emailing them in the middle of the night. I was like, look, that's not how email works. Okay. Like you don't, everyone else gets this. Like, I think I have good manners in general. It's okay to email you in the middle of the night.
You know,
get over
though,
it,
sorry,
Darren. No, it wasn't Darren.
Text and email are materially different.
Yeah, but
well, not if you don't know how to control notifications on your phone. I don't know the age of the person that was complaining about this, but one of the issues is people not knowing
how to
make it so it doesn't ding every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a famous study about Americans bringing their phones back because they don't work. And this was by Japanese phone companies, because the Japanese would read the instructions and then use the phone, and the Americans would just use the phone and then take it back because it doesn't work.
Beautiful.
I can't get this thing to work. I don't know if that's true.
It's because the Japanese have better manners.
Yes, the Japanese do have better manners. They have lovely manners. All right, is it rude to smack while eating?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous question.
All right. Lizzie Post agrees with you. She says, yes, it is. I say it depends on the age and condition of the person who's smacking.
Sure.
Let's see if you guys get this one right. Is it rude to ask for a plus one to a wedding?
What if you're one of the parties to the wedding? No, I'm just kidding.
Anna was rough with you. Huh? She's like, no, Joe, we're not having any of your friends at the wedding. And she was wise to do it, Joe.
I think it depends how close you are to the... I'm going to say no in the main.
I'm surprised at that answer.
I am surprised, too. I think it's extremely rude.
On a scale of baseball hats to actually rude things, I'd put this in the actually rude category.
You absolutely should not ask for a plus one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. But like you said, it but depends on how close. Like if it is a close relative.
If you were getting married, and I would say, can I bring Jackie?
Yeah, and that would be fine. I do agree with you. Yeah, if it's your close friend, there's a different. But if someone sends you an invite and it doesn't include a plus one, then you just don't give
those
people a good present.
I don't think it's rude to ask for clarification to make sure. You know, sometimes you'll get an ambiguous invite. And not just to weddings, I guess.
Oh yeah, wedding invitations now are a postcard with a QR code that you scan or something.
And I don't understand them. And I don't know how to respond to them. I don't understand them. So I just don't go to weddings anymore. All right, the last one, and then we got to take a break. We can do more when we come back if you want. Is it rude to recline on the airplane?
No.
Interesting.
Have you operated a seat on an air? What it reclines? What, a half an inch?
I don't even. I can't tell the difference between reclined and not reclined anymore. So the lady, you're not supposed to say stewardess. My wife will smack me if I say that. The flight attendant said to me, "Could you please put your seat up?" I had no idea for the entire flight that I was reclined. I didn't. I was not aware. I had not voluntarily reclined the seat. I think
it's not.
It depends on the length of the flight and how much of the flight you're like. I think, look, if we're all flying to Australia, I expect you're going to recline your seat. I understand that's what's going to happen on this flight. If it's a 2 hour flight to Sacramento, really, do you need to recline your seat?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Maybe you have a physical problem.
No, the answer is yes. Maybe the way the seat reclines side does not intrude on that fellow's.
I find it intrusive when the person in front of me.
It does if you're using a screen, though. It intrudes in that sense. Like it changes the.
Oh, there's a solution.
And
to
it
this.
Also can
Bring
shift, like if you've got like a drink on your tray.
I don't recline it consciously unless it's a very long flight.
It's not. But, it's not rude. They hardly recline at all.
I agree with that. They do hardly
and
recline.
And during
recline at
during
all.
Meal times on extended flights, if everybody has to sit up that very well, but after that, you can recline.
I think the issue is the airlines here have double sold the space. And I would add to this the armrest space. It's just this ambiguous no man's land.
No, it belongs to the middle person. The person in the middle, that's my feeling, is the person in the middle. Don't come onto my side. I will block you if you try to come onto my side. We will fight for that. But come on, that middle seat person, they're suffering. Let them have that.
That's fair enough.
I just lean away from
it. I'd be fine with having that be a socially accepted like norm.
Norm, yeah, right.
But
is it rude if you get bumped up into first and you yell out, "I just got bumped up into first, losers. Enjoy it in the back of the plane." Is that rude? All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. More Catholic Answers Live coming up.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more in step with the liturgical rhythm of the church on the web at magnificat.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
You know, we talk story with each of our very unique guests for the whole hour so that you can go deep with us as you yourself pursue your own story of heroic virtue and as you pursue intimacy with God.
The Bear Wozniak Adventure, Saturday night, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Do you have your phone on you, Chris? I wanted you to read a little the quote. I don't know if you brought your phone with
it's
you.
It's in my office.
I'm sorry that I did that because I wanted you to read Atlantic Magazine. We're doing the news of the world from a Catholic perspective with the flannel panel. And moved
I have
to
my
some,
laptop here.
Is Canada killing itself? That was the headline. Oh, God, another question headline. Yeah. A question mark headline from the Atlantic. And this is actually quite a disturbing story. Is Canada killing itself? More people dying by suicide in Canada now than are dying from renal failure. You'll have to tell me. I might be forgetting which disease. Joe, by the way, renal failure is a kidney
Thank
problem.
You.
I just wanted you to know. I didn't mean to use fancy words on you, Joe. I apologize. It is that was rude, and there's part of the growing rudeness to use medical terms. around the uneducated former lawyers and seminarians. But
in Quebec?
You sent the first several paragraphs of that article, well, but it is incomplete.
Or some cut and paste.
All right, but you sent the text. Can you tell me what the part that you sent in the text was devastating? And I just
there are three sections here.
All right,
I'll start with the short one here. In Quebec?
Yeah.
Quebec.
Catholic Quebec.
More than 7% of all deaths are by euthanasia.
God help us.
That is a shocking number.
Why are we not more shocked by
this? This is, by the way,
that's horrifying.
The highest rate of any jurisdiction in the world. So this is the other one, other side of Canada. Stephanie Green, a physician on Vancouver Island and one of the organization's founders, this is a pro-euthanasia organization, told me how her decades as a maternity doctor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, prepared her.
I've let to sink that one in.
Yeah.
So had helped equip her for this new chapter in her career that is killing people.
Yeah, because go ahead, read on.
Was maternity doctor a euphemism for like an abortionist?
No, she's talking about delivering babies.
It goes, here's the answer. In both fields, she explained, she was guiding a patient through an, I quote, essentially natural event, close quotes. The emotional and medical choreography, quote, of the most important days in their life. So birth and death, right? Emotional. I gotta repeat this phrase. The emotional and medical choreography. So killing someone is a medical choreography.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. It's a little bit more here, Joe. She continued the analogy. Here's Stephanie Green, medical doctor. I thought, well, one is like delivering life into the world, and the other feels like transitioning and delivering life out. And so Green does not refer to her, I forget what MAID is, M-A-I-D. It's this
medically assisted.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
In dying.
Yeah.
Medical assistance in dying.
Refer to her MAID deaths only as, here's the quote, provisions, the term for euthanasia that most clinicians have adopted, like choice, right? She also called them, quote, deliveries.
She might need a deliverance.
Because that's demonic.
Yeah.
She's making an equivalence between killing and giving birth. That's the equivalence that she's making. And she's doing it, she thinks that's poetic or something, that she sees killing somebody and giving birth to somebody essentially, look, Joe, this is the same
thing. I feel like O.J. missed a heck of a defense to say, well, death is an essentially natural event.
Here's a little more from the same piece. The details of the assisted death experience have become a preoccupation of Canadian life. Patients meticulously orchestrate their final moments, planning celebrations around them. Weekend house parties before a Sunday night euthanasia in the garden. A Catholic priest to deliver last rites.
That shocked me.
Yeah.
I was like, that really took me aback. Because that's a violation.
For sure.
Yeah, you're not allowed to do that.
You can't do that.
Extended family renditions of Auld Lang Syne at the bedside. For $10.99 Canadian, by the way, you can design your MAID experience with the help of the Be Ceremonial app. Suggested rituals include a story altar, a forgiveness ceremony, and the collecting of tears from witnesses.
You know, I do think we have to be careful not to be too critical of those who are really afraid of suffering or who are suffering greatly. Like, there is a terrible thing that happens with a kind of chronic suffering, and especially when that chronic suffering is persistent, just won't get better, but is also just progressively getting worse, that we owe a great deal to people who are in that situation, and we shouldn't make fun of them because they seek suicide. That's not what we're doing here. This is a country that is, rather than assisting those people or placing its resources at their service to palliate their suffering, to be with them in their suffering, is just killing them and calling that a cure to their suffering.
Yeah, so I'm sympathetic to what you say, in fact, you read the progression in the relaxation of the laws in Canada, which at one time only accounted for or permitted in cases of extreme suffering. Once that door is open, much the way the Lambeth Council, for example, said it's okay to, in a masterstroke of eugenics that no one seems to have caught, it's okay that the poor people contracept because, of course, we don't want them to reproduce.
Yeah.
So once
you let it, like people make fun of slippery slope arguments, and here's the problem with making fun of them. They're true. That's human nature is. We are all living on a slippery slope. If we let go of certain things, we will slip down and like if I start shooting heroin today, it's very likely I'm on a slippery slope to my personal destruction. That's what human life is. It's a slippery slope. So
I like that your gateway is beginning heroin. But yes, it's still a good point.
All right, I see what. If I continue with my hair, I get what you. Thanks for calling me out, Joe. All right, we'll be right back. We're going to talk more about what's going on in Canada. It's ugly. It's coming to a state near you. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers. And now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
What is the Catholic Church? Everyone seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. If it feels like we've played this game before, we have played this game before. Societies have embraced suicide in the past. Those societies didn't last. Their destruction follows shortly behind that embrace of suicide.
I wonder why.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know what happens when you embrace suicide is you get more suicide. And when you get more suicide, eventually your whole society will just end. You cannot. Death is not a basis for holding a society together. Death is the basis for the whole thing flying apart.
So here's an example, and I wouldn't call it a society, but it was a cult. The dude in Guyana.
Jim Jones.
Yeah, Jim Jones.
Yeah.
Right.
Everyone sort of regards that moment with horror. Right.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, Chris.
Why are Canadians regarding what's going on in their country with horror?
Yeah, they're a Jim Jones drink the Kool-Aid cult now, and they think that's good. Like we're doing it better than him.
Right.
Like our system is better than Jim Jones' system. It's insane. It's insanity. But do you want to read any more of the clips?
No, that's but what I ask is, how much deeper into the abyss can you sink when suicide is a positive social good?
And Joe was saying to us during the break, well, you can sink lower. And say something about that, Joe. It seems to me that a society that has decided, you know, you're not feeling your best this year, why don't you just kill yourself? Which is, honestly, that's where Canada is. Don't lie to yourselves, Canada. That's what's going on. People are having a bad year and killing themselves, and you're all saying, well, major depression should be treated with suicide. That's a dangerous thing that you've decided to do. And so, Joe, how can it get worse than that?
Yeah, one of the things that happens with medically assisted suicide or murder, as we sometimes call it, is it's much cheaper than actual medical care. And so insurance companies will stop paying for treatment so that you're actually in a much worse position in a country with legalized euthanasia, because insurance will cover your treatment in a country where they can't kill you legally, and won't cover your treatment in a country where they can kill you legally to try to put pressure on you to kill yourself.
Right.
Like, that is actually happening.
And they can make you feel bad enough that you want to kill yourself.
Right. Like, so
that's a self-fulfilling
thing.
Yes, exactly.
Suffering is not worse in Canada than it is in other parts of the world.
Okay, now hang on a second. And
yeah.
I'm obviously not defending what's going on here, but it is cold there, and...
Anything above 75 or below 65.
It's very cold and dark, and like the sun doesn't shine for 6 months out of the year or something.
Not Quebec. Quebec is beautiful.
Quebec is beautiful. When the sun's out.
It is beautiful. Dick Lamb, remember Dick Lamb, governor of Colorado, Richard Lamb.
I have forgotten him. I apologize.
He was the brother of the of Bobby Lamb, the guy who played keyboards for Chicago. He made that comment.
I'm nodding like I know what you're talking about. I'm going to keep nodding like
so
I know.
So when
you're talking
was
about.
He governor in the early 80s or mid 80s, mid to late 80s? He made that comment about healthcare. He said, whatever it was, you know, 80% of the person's spending on health of a human's spending on healthcare is in the last, you know, 20% of his life, or 90-10 or whatever it is.
Right.
Now, he actually was observing something about prolonging human life, probably artificially or unnecessarily.
Yeah. There can be that kind of cruelty at the end of life.
What's that?
There can be that kind of cruelty where
life gets prolonged unnecessarily.
Where there's treatments that are cruel, are inflicted upon the dying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that has... what's the word? Morphed into what Joe is describing.
Well, we just kill him.
Yeah.
We save that. If 80%, we could save 80% on our healthcare. If we just kill sick people, we'll kill sick people.
No, my doctor said to me last time I saw him, he said, the trick is to get all your morbidity in the last 6 months of your life.
Thanks, Doc.
How do I organize
I'm working
this?
On that. Thanks, Doc. One way to do that is to just kill yourself because then you're completely in control of it. Because one of the ways, that doctor is talking about controlling something that you actually don't have
control over. And this, I think, is obviously what's at the heart of the Christian worldview, and that is that there's a lot we don't control, and Jesus does.
But caring for the sick is not a waste of money.
No.
And that's, I think, where we're in trouble, is that we're starting to see it as, look, these people are, if we get rid of them, our carbon footprint will go down. You think, oh, that's silly side. But no, people are saying that. There are these, people are having to write books about how, have you seen that? There's a New York Times bestseller out now about how having fewer babies is not actually better for the planet. Because we have to explain to people, look, this is how crazy it has become. Look, your death is actually good for the planet, so why don't we just hasten your death? There are people who are thinking that way.
Well, I mean, I was a child of 1985. 1991, Captain Planet, there was a special episode encouraging us to have small families for the sake of the environment.
Bill McGibbon.
We can choose to not have more than two kids.
Yeah, Bill McGibbon came out with that famous book, Only One.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a strong indoctrination in the other direction, and it was completely wrong, as it always was. I mean, if you follow the whole debate between Paul Ehrlich and...
Ehrlich was totally wrong. Ehrlich is
right,
totally,
right.
Yeah. But he still won't admit that he's wrong. But he's completely wrong.
Is he
still
Julian
alive?
Simon.
Yeah, he's still
the
alive.
Anonymous Julian Simon.
Yeah, so you're talking about, okay, so we have to slow down for a minute. Joe is talking about a famous bet between Paul Ehrlich, who wrote The Population Bomb, one of the most evil endeavors in false science ever perpetrated, a lie that Walter Cronkite fell for hook, line, and sinker to his eternal embarrassment, I hope, because CBS News started selling the idea of the population bomb. It was bad science. It was stupid science. It never happened. It never can happen. It never will happen. But millions of people chose not to have children because of it. But there was a famous bet. So that's what you were referring to. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not
a bet.
Okay.
Go ahead, Joe. Explain the bet.
I'm not a big Julian Simon fan.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yes.
We talked about this one other time on the air.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't matter. Julian Simon was right about this. And Julian Simon argued.
If you view people as economic resources.
But let's not argue about it without explaining what it is.
Okay.
So go ahead, Joe.
Yes. That's a great point. In 1980, the two have a 10-year-long bet on natural resource scarcity. Because Paul Ehrlich's whole theory was population growth is just going to be like rats, where you're going to overpopulate and there's going to be a shortage of natural resources. And in response to this, Julian Simon says, okay, well, if you're right, then your argument is that the price of all these goods is going to go way up. But as we look at history, the price of goods has gone down in terms of natural resources.
Raw materials.
Like it's easier to get a gallon of oil. I was, I was looking at old Facebook pictures. 6 years ago, gas prices were like $3.30. Here they're $2.80. I mean, they've gone down in real dollars, and when you adjust for inflation, it's a massive drop. Well, that's the overall story, that things tend to go down in price, and that's not what you'd expect if Paul Ehrlich's view was correct. So Ehrlich takes the bet. They bet on five different natural resources, and he's wrong on all five. It was copper, chromium, nickel, tin, and tungsten. And Ehrlich completely lost on all of this, which should have been the end of this whole line of thinking. Like every means by which you proposed it could be measured, it was debunked. And you chose the five. And you lost on all five.
But
and yet
Ehrlich
people continue to lose. No.
No, there's still a population bomb in our future, according to. But
Ehrlich wasn't even an original thinker. He was working off of Thomas Malthus from the.
Right, the dismal science.
Yeah. I'm wondering, though, if there isn't something that's even deeper than care for the environment or whatever it is claims that or these people claim motivates their thought, because with the deliberate effort not to reproduce or abortion or taking suicide, euthanasia, the thing that all of these have in common is a hatred of the human person.
Disgust at the human person. Negative.
So what does that derive from? Well, I know the devil hates the human person.
Right.
Because he is, because the human person is repopulating heaven, which two-thirds of, he and two-thirds of his followers vacated, according to the fathers.
A third of the angels is
Is it a third? I thought it was two-thirds.
That's
usual. Yeah, yeah. So now the kingdom of heaven is being repopulated by the human person. And so I think it's important to bear in mind that to recall that these abortion, contraception, suicide, these things are deliberate enthusiasms of the devil because of the resentment that he has for the human person.
And I think that's why
they're taking his place.
Right. And that I'm glad you said that, because I said earlier this Canadian attitude towards life is demonic. I'm not saying that everyone in Canada is possessed by the devil. I'm saying that the devil entices us to imagine the world in a way that the world is not. And then we are tricked by the demons into thinking fewer people is better. Less sick people is better. Therefore, abortion is good and suicide is good and euthanasia is good. All of that is demonic. That's a demonic lie, because the world is better with more people and it's worse with fewer people. The world gets better with more people. And so God wasn't tricking us when he said, be fruitful and multiply. He was not tricking us. He was telling us the key to our happiness and our flourishing. More people is better. There is no such thing as a population bomb. There is no such thing as overpopulation. The only place that has ever been overpopulated is the lifeboats, certain lifeboats of the Titanic. There's no landmass that is overpopulated or ever will be. People are good. If you become confident in that, then the scales start to fall from your eyes and you see this, all of this doomsday stuff is a lie. Have babies, be happy. That's what God wants.
Well said, Cy Kellett.
Amen. Yes, that is very well said. I'm going to take this in a much darker direction.
Go. Oh, let's go. We've been waiting for you to take it in a darker direction.
After that inspiring, uplifting, encouraging talk by Cy, Joe's going to bring it back down.
You know what? You asked me earlier, how can the situation in Canada get worse? And I think one of the things is you can start shaming people not only for not killing themselves, but for not killing their disabled children. Richard Tenania.
That's going on in California.
That's going on over the
preach
place.
Preach it.
Richard Tenania is a popular right-wing speaker. And so this is not coming, in this case, from the left. And he attacked online 3 days ago people who don't want to kill children with Down syndrome in the womb. He says Down syndrome is the one disease where the relatives of the people with the disease go around advocating more people have it. It's a uniquely sick thing. And he lauded places like Iceland, where they've killed nearly everyone with Down syndrome. That is, again, demonic. And an obvious, dishonest argument. To say, I don't think we should murder people with one leg, doesn't mean I think we should go around cutting off people's legs so that we have more people with one leg. It just means if someone has Down syndrome, you don't advocate for them being killed. That doesn't mean you're trying to get everybody else to develop a third, 21 chromosome or something like that. That's not the argument at all. It's just regardless of if someone is sick or well, regardless of if they have, the normal number of chromosomes or one more, we don't treat them like garbage. We don't kill them.
What kind of a person feels this loathing towards
Down syndrome person?
Who tend to be just, frankly, the
right.
most
people that are better than you.
Joyful.
Kill them. Yeah, right. This is a person who's disposed almost always towards goodness. I feel like I've known a pretty good number of Down syndrome people with Down syndrome in my life. I haven't met any evil ones yet.
No, there's no guile or...
There's some. but in general, no. Right. This is not a disease that or an illness or a chromosomatic problem that makes people worse than you, dude. So why do you want to kill them all?
Right. If you're worried about something like human suffering, this doesn't seem to be the place to direct your ire. And instead of directing ire, maybe come up with a constructive, non-lethal solution.
Well, I don't like to say political things, and we do have to go to the break, but I'm going to end with a political thing. I'm going to advocate a presidential candidate for the United States. And I know usually we don't do this, but I want Patricia Heaton to be president of the United States. I will vote for her. I wish she would run. Patricia Heaton was on this before the rest of us were. If you don't know who Patricia Heaton is, look her up and then go visit her and tell her she should run for president of the United States. We got to take a break. We come back. We got a new segment on Catholic Answers, the Flannel Panel, Catholic Answers Live Flannel Panel.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1978. Mother Angelica produces her first television show, Our Hermitage, at a local television studio. The Christian Broadcast Network requests 60 episodes. Cover the cost, Mother returns to the speaking circuit.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We've got a new segment we're going to try out called Flannel Panel Recommends. Each of us is going to give a recommendation to you for something that will make your life better. I already recommended having babies, and I feel good about that recommendation. But let me just show you. This is not my recommendation. I'm just going to show you how it works. So if there's a book you really like, then you recommend the book, and this book will make people's lives better. So I'm going to recommend a new book. This is just an example. This is not real right now. This is just an example, but there's a lovely new book out about called How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone: Tested Techniques for Planting Seeds and Saving Souls. I recommend everyone get this book. Joe, you see I'm doing this as an example.
Who is the author of that?
The main author is Steve Dawson, the founder of St. Paul Street Evangelization. Brilliant man with wonderful insights on how to evangelize. How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone. I'm not giving my recommendation right now. I'm showing you guys how this would go.
Yes.
So you find something that you would think makes everyone's life better. So let's say, for example, you thought the book How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone would make everyone's life better. You would hold up the book How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone, and you would say, buy this book, it'll make your life better. So do either of you want to try it?
Yeah, I can understand hypothetically if someone were to pitch that book.
What's the book called?
How to Talk About Jesus?
With
anyone.
Yeah.
Would you go to shop.catholic.com?
You could go to shop.catholic.com and get it right now if you want it. You can buy it in bulk. You can give it away at your parish.
Can you get Cy Kellett to sign it?
Yes.
I understand. He also is the author of this book.
Because what's more important than evangelization? We are all called to share the person of Jesus Christ. And this one is called, just for an example, I'm just using this as an example now. I might say, hey, go out and buy How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone.
May I give a footnote here?
Yeah.
So we have a Wednesday staff meeting at Catholic Answers. The whole staff gathers on Wednesdays.
Yes.
In the morning for a meeting. We call it a staff.
Or are you going to talk about Todd Agliolo?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Go ahead. Share this anecdote.
Todd Agliolo, who's the
no-nonsense publisher.
He's originally from Long Island or something.
Right, but he's got a more of a Bronx feel to him.
He's
a rough and ready Italian.
There's nothing cuddly about him at all.
No, he's a horrible person. No, he's a great person. I'm sorry, I went too far with that.
He has a sous vide machine.
Yeah.
He's into knives, Japanese knives.
He used to throw a great party every fall.
Yeah.
But he hasn't done that.
No, he hasn't.
Years.
No. Todd, who is the director of publishing at Catholic Answers, periodically will talk at staff meetings. All the directors get an opportunity to.
Yeah.
Todd always sort of objects that he never feels like he has to say anything.
All the directors get it, even Christine Venditti?
Yes.
Okay.
Director
right.
Venditti.
Just want to make sure that we...
He got up and gave the most heartfelt endorsement of your book. And you know what he said? He said, if you want to continue in your delusion that you don't have a responsibility to evangelize, and specifically to have conversations with people about Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Because he said, some people say, oh, well, I evangelize by example. Right.
Yeah.
He says.
That's how they talk.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
They have that very lilting.
I evangelize by example.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can tell, they really don't. But he said, if you're one of those people who thinks you don't have an obligation to have conversations with people about Jesus Christ, do not pick up this book.
Yeah.
Because it will shut that nonsense down.
How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone, available now at shop.catholic.com.
3 years ago, I told Steve Dawson we needed this book.
Well,
and you brought it into existence, Cy.
Well, I have to say, every idea in the book is Steve's idea, but I just helped organize it into a book. But Steve, a great man,
he is
a magnificent
mission.
He's at our. I'm delighted
to be
part of it.
He's going to be at our conference this. Yeah.
Okay, so that would be how you do it. So that's just an example of how you do it. You don't have to endorse a particular book, like How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone. But Chris, you want to go first? Or
I want to recommend two things.
You go first. Go.
The first is Cluny Press. Cluny.
Okay.
Cluny Press. These young men are bringing so many classics of theology, of fiction, of history back into print. Now, I have one.
They have one of my favorite books.
They have several of my favorite authors, including Paul Horgan. They're bringing almost all of Paul Horgan back into print. I think America's greatest Catholic novelist. And Henri Dunant-Moreau, the great historian. They're bringing all of his stuff back into print. And Edward Lean, What is Education? Although I think they've retitled it. Father Edward Lean. Was one of the great preconciliar retreat givers, Irish priest. I have one little beef with Cluny, and a lot of it is POD. Some of it is hardcover, which is really beautiful.
Yeah,
and
POD is print on demand.
But I don't fault them because to maintain so much inventory,
that's hard to do.
Of all of the titles they're bringing back, this is how they can do it. And POD gets better every year, and their covers are truly lovely. So Cluny
Press.
Check it out. Here's the other one.
Yeah.
Anthony Bukowski is the best living Catholic fiction writer alive today.
You've told me that, and I got to read him.
You got to get him on the show. You got to do an interview with him. He just came out with a brand new collection of short. He's from Superior, Wisconsin. All of his stuff, he's Polish, Bukowski. So all of his stuff is set in up there in Superior, Wisconsin. He's been writing books, short stories, since the 80s. University of Wisconsin Press, his latest book is The Thief of Words. This man, I think he's in his late 70s, he is absolutely at the top of his art. There's not a better short story writer alive in America today. He's also a Catholic, Anthony Bukowski.
Joe, you want to go or you want to wait for me to go?
I can go quickly.
Okay.
I was going to say Introduction to the Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales.
You love that book.
Is that a new book? Is that new?
Yeah.
Does it have to be new?
It's within the last 500 years.
Are the Cluny books new? These are reprints of books like as old as the one I recommended. Edwin O'Connor.
Yes.
Is one of the books that Cluny has.
Yes.
It is a book called The Edge of Sadness. And my first spiritual director told me it was the greatest book on the priesthood written by a Catholic layman. And it's a novel about a priest who is spiritually burnt out. And so I highly recommend it, particularly for priests, but also for anyone who just feels exhausted. And if they feel like that exhaustion is impeding their spiritual life, this is a great novel that grapples with that issue in a really honest way. And as a bonus, gives us a great kind of glimpse into the life of the church, kind of at the eve of the Second Vatican Council, where you start to see that things aren't as pretty as maybe they look on the outside.
Say the name of the book and the author again, Joe.
Yeah, The Edge of Sadness by Edwin O'Connor.
Very good. Can I do two? I'm going to do two since you did two.
It's your show, son.
I hope that people will. First thing I want to recommend, go to triumphoftheheart.com. Triumphoftheheart.com. Anthony D'Ambrosio, Marcellino D'Ambrosio's son, a fine young artist, filmmaker, in love with the person of Maximilian Kolbe. And the big Maximilian Kolbe, Triumph of the Heart, is coming out in September. I just want every Catholic to know it's coming out, and please consider at least sponsoring a showing of it in a theater near you or going to see it. My other recommendation, and I know I'm early on this, but I've always wanted to make this recommendation early. I have discovered something in my own life in recent years, Advent and Lent without media. And so I know we're a long way from Advent, but I would like to put the idea in your head. Could you consider fasting from media throughout the season of Advent? It's done something for me. I very much value those times. And these are beautiful seasons that the church has. Give it a shot. Anybody? Anything else?
If I may.
That comes from the heart because you're in media,
I know, and that's why I hate it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like people that make sausage hate sausage.
Vatican.va, no. Getting Pope Leo's homilies and just reading through them,
Vatican.va.
Truly beautiful. Yeah. Just read his homilies and his Wednesday audiences, and there's something so spiritually rich so frequently that it's a great, easy to read spiritual resource.
All right. Those are Flannel Panel recommends. That will do it for us. Joe Heschmeyer, thank you very much. You came dressed and prepared for this one. Well, it was beautiful.
I do what I can.
And you have very good manners, too, Joe Heschmeyer. Chris Check.
Thank you, Cy.
Thank you for not only being on the show, but you didn't wear a baseball cap indoors.
I'll do my best.
I appreciate both of those things. Darren running the board, Edgar running the cameras. Anybody else in there? Or is it just you two? It's just you two. Like, this, the five of us did this whole show. It's beautiful. We'll see you next time. By the way, if you have complaints, send them to Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.